where I live.
Intruder alert, intruder alert.
Welcome aboard, Captain. Fighter pilots needed in Sector Wars. Play Astro Blaster.
R2 trying to increase the power.
Hi friends, thanks for joining us once again on the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast. This time, we're going to take a look at Sega Gremlin's 1982 isometric space shooter, Zaxxon. Now, just before we start the show, I want to dedicate this one to Richard Eichland. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Thanks for your email, I really appreciate it. Developed by Sega Gremlin, Zaxxon at the very least was getting shopped around by 1981, as there is certainly a flyer with that date over at the Arcade Flyer Archive, one that shows rows and rows and rows of beautiful Zaxxon machines being constructed at the factory, although its listed release date was January of 1982. We talked a bit about Sega back in our third episode of the podcast, featuring Golden Axe. They threw their hat in the arcade ring back in 1978 and started to make a name for themselves a year later, thanks in no small part with the merger of Gremlin Industries. Gremlin had found success distributing arcade titles in North America, like 1978's GB, 1980's Astro Fighter, Moon Cresta, Space Firebird, Carnival, Astro Blaster in 1981, as well as Space Fury and a little arcade classic that you might be familiar with. Yep, they were responsible for getting Konami's Frogger into the North American arcades. Then they hit it big again when Sega Gremlin released Zaxxon. I haven't actually been able to find any info on the lead team, or even head designer for this game. Although, I've seen reports from other online sources that claim that Ikigami Tsushinki Company Limited had a hand in Zaxxon's development. They are even rumored to have been used as a subcontractor for various Japanese game companies. Kongo Bongo, Popeye, and even Donkey Kong are a few of the games they might have had a hand in creating. While I don't know the validity of their claims, it has been reported they sued Nintendo, and successfully, over their program code that was being used in Donkey Kong Jr. The two companies reached a settlement, although it's never been reported what the terms of that agreement were. While there isn't a soundtrack for Zaxxon, it does boast some impressive effects, some of them quite vital for doing well in the game. These effects are credited to Katsuhiro Hayashi. Katsuhiro went on to work on popular titles for both arcade and the Sega Master System console titles, like Hang-On, Rambo First Blood Part 2, Super Hang-On, Galaxy Force and its sequel, as well as Gain Ground. When Zaxxon hit arcades, it was groundbreaking thanks in no small part to the isometric design for the game, or axonometric projection. That term, of course, has been cited as to how the game got its unique name, Zaxxon, Axon. The isometric design, for those that haven't played the game, means it appears to be three-dimensional from a third-person viewpoint. Well, if you haven't played Zaxxon for yourself, some other classic games that use the isometric design include 1982's Q-Bert, 1983's Kongo Bongo, 1984's Marble Madness, and I suppose 1989's Escape from the Planet of the Robot Monsters. An often overlooked game, but a favorite here at the Arcadia Retrocade. Zaxxon also included shadows for the player's spaceship, which helps in navigating close to the ground, as well as let you know at a glance at how low you are, especially if you can't spare a moment for the altitude meter. Before I really jump into the gameplay, I found out that Zaxxon scored another first, and that is it had a commercial made for the arcade game itself to be aired on television. You know, to get arcade addicts like ourselves excited enough to visit their local arcade to check it out. It's an awesome little production which includes some very decent CGI, on par with that year's Tron by Walt Disney. It cost $150,000 for the 30-second ad, and was produced by none other than Paramount Pictures.
In the two-dimensional world of video dots and dashes, flat blips and formless blobs, one video arcade game soars a dimension above the rest. Zaxxon! Experience the control as you climb and dive. Feel the power as you attack and evade. Discover a new level of excitement with the true feel of action in three dimensions. Zaxxon, from the master design engineers of Sega.
Zaxxon tasks 1 to 2 players, taking alternate turns, with piloting a space vessel, or fighter ship, on an attack run against the asteroid fortress of a robotic warlord named Zaxxon, appropriately enough. The game is actually made up of 3 stages. The first space fortress stage, an outer space stage, and then a second space fortress stage, where at the end of that, you will encounter Zaxxon. Using an inverted 8-way joystick, one that resembles a flight stick, the player can move the starship up and down, as well as left and right in those directions. Or, since it's a fighter ship, I guess I should say it can bank and climb in those directions, right? The joystick also possesses a trigger, as well as a red light on the top of the stick that lights up when you pull the trigger. In addition, there are 2 fire buttons on the control panel, one to the left and to the right of the stick, so you can easily play whether you're right or left-handed. I'm guessing these additional buttons were included in case the joystick trigger malfunctioned. If you press the fire trigger and button, you can set up a rhythm that will basically give you constant fire in the game. As I've already mentioned, the game includes an altitude meter, located on the left side of the screen. To be honest, I find it easier to navigate through the game by paying attention to where the shots from the space vessel are hitting, or the shadow cast beneath it. The reason this is so important is because the space fortress of Zaxxon requires a player to avoid not just various enemies, that I'll get to in just a bit, but obstacles like the many walls and energy or force fields that you encounter while navigating the fortress. If a player comes into contact with a field or wall, your fighter ship explodes in an impressive fireball. Thankfully, in the beginning, you can judge if you're going to hit a barrier in the fortress if you see your shots registering against the objects. With the earlier waves, you can quite easily just fly over those fields and walls, but in later stages, you will be tasked with trying to squeeze through openings in the walls, their locations changing depending on the level, and requiring pinpoint precision. With the energy fields, you will need to learn in advanced stages to be able to slip beneath them. This is one of the main reasons players feel Zaxxon is one of the more difficult classic arcade games out there. It will normally take just a few games for a player to get the hang of the flight techniques. It's a steep but necessary learning curve, however, to get to the later levels. In addition to avoiding crashing into those barriers, a player must also contend with a fuel supply, which is easily tracked on the bottom of the screen. You can refill your fighter ship's fuel easily enough by swooping in low when flying through the fortress and blasting one of the reddish-orange fuel tanks scattered about. It not only gives you a fuel boost, but will net you 300 points. They are so numerous in the fortress stages, a player really doesn't have to worry about his space vessel running empty. But if it does, you naturally nosedive and explode. Now, you might be thinking you can just keep your fighter ship cruising at the top of the screen, just taking it easy, dipping down to pick off a fuel tank when you need it. That is sadly not the case, as the Zaxxon considers that a bit of a cheat and will launch a missile at you, forcing you to swoop down in the hope of dodging it, which you might be able to do if you're lucky. Staying low to the ground on the fortress stages would be a whole heck of a lot easier if you didn't have to contend with Zaxxon's defenses. These stationary foes are located in the same spot on each of the fortress levels. You have gun turrets, some colored green and others gray. They will fire laser bolts at your fighter ship. They can only hit you when you are skimming the surface of the fortress, but can be positioned so that their blast might be heading towards you while another turret shot is coming at you from the side. In the later stages, they also fire a lot faster, making it harder to avoid them. Blasting these turrets to scrap will get a player 200 to 500 points. Another deadly foe is the ground-to-air missiles. These emerge from the numerous missile ports dotted across the surface of the asteroid fortress. Actually, these might be the most deadly, as the green and red missiles have a tendency to launch upwards just as a player is trying to pass over the port safely, so you really have to keep on your toes. Blasting a missile out of the sky will net you 150 points. Also on the surface of those fortress stages are red-hued radar dishes. These aren't dangerous beyond being deadly if you crash into one, and they are normally positioned so it's risky to attempt to blow one up. but they are worth a cool 1,000 points each if you do. On the Space Fortress stages, you will also come across stationary planes. Perhaps they are fueling up for the outer space stages. Of course, if you come into contact with these, you will lose a fighter pilot in an explosion. Blasting these on the ground will earn a player only 50 points, as opposed to the 100 points a plane in the outer space stages. Sure, they may not be worth as much as the flying ones, but they are at least easy targets. After clearing the first Space Fortress stage, a player then proceeds to the outer space stage. In these stages, you will encounter enemy fighter crafts, most of them traveling in patterns, forcing you to lower or raise your own space vessel to match their altitude, firing a shot and destroying them before they can manage to blast you. This is made a little easier by an audio beep you'll hear when you've reached the same altitude level as your enemy, as well as the addition of crosshairs appearing in front of your own ship. Besides dodging enemy fire, you need to be wary of them attempting to kamikaze you to boot, which in later levels is quite a bit harder to avoid as they will start emerging from behind you. As I've already mentioned, each of the planes you nail will earn you 100 points. After the second outer space stage, you will get 150 points for destroying them. If you manage to clear 20 fighter crafts while in an outer space level, you will be rewarded an additional 1,000 points. Those grounded planes from the first fortress stage count to those 20 planes needed for the bonus, which is another reason you should blast those stationary ones. Also, appearing twice in each outer space stage is a satellite that will cross the screen at the highest altitude. These will earn a player 300 points if blasted. Surviving or clearing the planes from the outer space stage, a player will find themselves going on an attack run on a second Space Fortress level. Although, this time, you at least won't have to worry about missiles launching from their ground ports. You still have to worry about the turrets and fuel, however, but worst of all, you will be tasked with flying through many more openings and walls and under those force fields than in the first Fortress stage. If a player manages to survive this treacherous run, you will finally encounter the mighty Zaxxon. You won't be able to actually destroy this villainous robot, but you must blow up the dangerous red missile he is carrying. As soon as Zaxxon appears, you need to start blasting away, paying attention to where those shots are landing, because you need 6 direct hits on the nose of that red missile to destroy it, before the robot launches it at you. If you manage to blow it up before it's fired off, you will get 1,000 points. If your aim is off or you're a little too slow, the missile is launched. It still takes 6 direct shots, and you either blow it up or it will destroy you. Taking it out while the missile is in flight gets you a mere 200 points. But at least you live to take on Zaxxon again, after another 3 stages. Zaxxon has no ending, so after encountering the robot, you will find yourself back on the first fortress stage, then the outer space stage, and second fortress stage, although at harder and harder difficulty each time, naturally. The world record holder for Zaxxon, with a more than impressive score of 4,680,740 points, is Vernon Kalinkos, hope I'm saying that right, which was verified by Twin Galaxies referee on March 15th, 1982, at the Arcadia Retrocade.
We have transport.
Vic, where am I?
Chon? Hey, man, welcome to the Retros Vault.
Yeah, it was Blacklight went out on Tron, just trying to repair that. What's going on? How did I get here?
You said you were working on the Tron arcade cabinet at the Arcadia Retrocade?
Yes, Vic, that's right.
I bet you 10 to 1, you accidentally triggered the transportation module.
Yeah, there was something off. I kind of found a piece that shouldn't have been there.
Well, I did try to tell Shay not to pick up that particular cabinet from the Incom fire sale. Well, I'm glad you're here. We've been trying to get you on the show for quite a while, as you're one of the chief techs here. Why don't you tell the listeners how you first learned of the Arcadia Retrocade?
Yeah, Vic, I heard about the arcade through friends. It's been about 4 to 6 months coming regularly every week or so, getting to know Andy, Shay, and yourself just as a regular customer.
And then after 4 or 5 months, as you said, of being a regular player here at the arcade, You showed that you had a natural talent for actually fixing the machines as well.
Thank you, Vic. Not quite so sure that it's a natural talent. I got an electrical engineering degree from our local university here. It actually took a little bit of trying to get through the door here at the arcade as the tech. One evening, though, Shay and I were working on Moon Patrol. I was showing Shay how to install a power supply replacement for the game, and after that, to kind of open the door.
And you sort of got the golden ticket to become one of our chief techs.
Yeah, that's right, Vic. Shay trusted that I knew what I was doing after that.
Now, before we jump into what I find to be, quite frankly, some of the more interesting elements of your job as a chief tech, I'd like to ask you, did you grow up with arcade games, or were your early experiences with video games more of home consoles?
Definitely home consoles. I had, you know, Super Nintendo and N64, PlayStation. Later on, got a computer, and that's kind of where I got the most of my arcade experience, was playing MAME. Every now and again, would visit, you know, a local theater, but all they would have is, you know, Galaga and Area 51. Cut my teeth mostly on MAME. A lot of different, you know, titles at your fingertips there.
Any favorite titles that stand out?
Well, I really liked the shoot 'em up series, Raiden. Though after coming to the arcade, I've definitely developed more of a appreciation for some of the classics. I used to only really play the shoot 'em up games.
You also seem to be a pretty big fan of the SNK Neo Geo system. I've definitely seen you log in some time on games like Metal Slug and is it Windjammers?
I definitely am a fan of Windjammers, as you can tell by my tank top. It's kind of like Pong, except instead of paddles, you're playing professional athletes hurling flying power discs. Each athlete has his own signature moves that help you to get the disc past their opponent. It's kind of hard to explain. Maybe you'll have to do a future episode on it.
Oh, I would absolutely love to. We can have you back on the show. Now, you got Windjammers for the arcade. Did you get it on a trade, or did you just buy it?
Yeah, actually, Vic, I did buy it on eBay. I did a lot of searching around. It was just a game that I love so much that I thought that the arcade should have it.
For those listeners who haven't had the pleasure of playing on a Neo Geo cabinet, it's got an interesting way of changing the games. Maybe you can go into a little more detail on that.
Yeah, the Neo Geo MVS, the multi-video system, came in a number of different configurations. Some were single slot, double slot, you know, four slot, or six slot. Basically, the games themselves come in giant cartridges, not too much unlike, you know, an NES or Super Nintendo cartridge, except with quite a bit more programs space.
So basically an arcade operator could just plug and play, switch the games if it wasn't making any money?
Yeah, so the arcade has a four-slot Neo Geo. I've spent quite a bit of time juggling around a few different games. You know, sometimes, you know, putting in things like Neo Drift Out. I really like the game, but it's not one that really attracts many of the customers. I think right now the Neo Geo has Garo, Mark of the Wolves, Metal Slug 3, Windjammers, and Last Blade 2.
The subject of this podcast happens to be Zaxxon. This is a title that you are quite familiar with, as I recall. I believe you still hold the high score at the arcade, which is upwards of 350,000? You mentioned just a little bit ago that when you first started coming to the arcade, that you began to find yourself attracted to the classic games. Zaxxon certainly fits that bill. What about it drew you in?
Yeah, Vic, it was mainly the presentation of the game. The isometric aspect that makes the game unique was definitely appealing to me. I really liked the style of those kind of games. But even just the colors and sounds were appealing to me. Also, the gameplay was sort of unique through the isometric aspect.
I think that is one of the things that most players struggle with, John, that isometric viewpoint. You really have to pay attention to where your shots are landing if you don't want to end up smashing into a wall or energy field.
Yeah, you touched on a important point for Zaxxon. You really have to watch your shots and kind of getting a feel for, you know, the altitude of your ship. And that was a big part in kind of learning how to play the game. Likewise, I focus more on the ship's relative size and screen position than I do, you know, the little, in my opinion, worthless altitude meter that appears all the way on the left. If you try to look at that and play the game, you're just going to end up dead. Let me back up. The altitude meter does help with setting up the second stage dogfight portion, as I like to think of it, in getting the first four ships that appear, and also when attacking the Zaxxon at the end. For the Zaxxon, if you get to an altitude of 2.5, whatever relative unit of measure they're using in Zaxxon, and line up correctly, you will hit the Zaxxon in the missile and easily destroy the boss.
This would be the perfect moment to start talking about some of the repair work you do at the arcade. I can recall an issue we had with the Zaxxon cabinet, where for all intents and purposes, it seemed like the machine had died.
Yes, I remember that, Vic. Shay and I had to pull the cabinet out. With Zaxxon and Congo Bongo, as well as Astro Blaster, those style of Sega cabinets have the game boards just behind the front panel, which is underneath the control panel behind the coin chutes. So first, checked the power supply, made sure that it was outputting 5 volts, and that all the connections on the game board were secure, that also the game was not playing blind.
What do you mean, John, by a game as playing blind?
Well, playing blind is what we typically refer to as a game that's actually, you know, functioning, the game itself, but the monitor, for whatever reason, is off, either because the monitor chassis is broken or isn't receiving power.
I've shared on the podcast before that we heard from other arcade operators that the monitor can be dangerous.
Yes, working on the monitor can be very dangerous, especially when the cabinet is plugged in and turned on. The output of the flyback transformer on the monitor chassis to the monitor itself through the anode cap is often in excess of 20,000 volts, which is, of course, very deadly.
For what it's worth, our Zaxxon cabinet had a bit of a simple solution, right?
Yeah, so after checking all the typical things that you go through to make sure that everything is operating correctly, I still couldn't quite figure out what the problem was. When you have that front flap open, there's a switch that has to be depressed when the game is closed for it to function. When it's open, you can pull out the switch for a service mode, and everything was fine in the service mode. But eventually we noticed that when the front panel was closed, sometimes it would go back off again. It turned out that the front panel itself wasn't secure, that the kill switch, as it's called, was coming open and turning off the game. So just screwing down the front panel of the Zaxxon cab fixed the problem.
I've mentioned before that it's almost like some of the 125 machines we currently have on the floor develop a personality of their own. Like they get a mite temperamental. What game has caused you the most grief in getting it up and running properly?
I'd love to answer your question, Vic, but I kind of have to, you know, hit this deadline here with Tron. The arcade should be opening soon. I really need to, you know, go and finish up here.
Oh, of course, I understand.
So how do I get out of here, Vic?
Oh, that's easy. Just go right over there. Yeah, just step on that teleportation pad there.
Okay, yeah, right over here.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, before I forget, Vic, be sure that next time when you're shutting down the arcade, don't...
We have transport.
Don't what? Retro's computer, you did it again! John was telling me something important, something I needed to know. What do you have to say for yourself?
End of line.
And now, these messages...
This is it. We're going in after Zaxxon.
The most powerful force in space. It's gonna try to blow us away.
Close? Gotta stay low.
Zaxxon, the three-dimensional arcade sensation, is now a home video sensation.
Now to evade those enemy fighters and go face-to-face with Zaxxon itself.
No one has ever gotten this far before. Attack!
Play Zaxxon on your ColecoVision, Atari VCS, or in television video game system. Wow. Zaxxon, it'll blow you away.
Arthur?
With a game as popular as Zaxxon, it not only received a sequel, coming out in 1982 as well, entitled Super Zaxxon, but obviously saw many ports to the popular home consoles and computers of the day, like the Apple II, Atari 2600 and Atari 5200, as well as the Atari 400, 800, and XL home computers. The most faithful home port was on the ColecoVision, with the Atari 2600 and Intellivision versions having to drop the isometric viewpoint, instead adopting a view from behind the ship. The C64 actually got two different versions of the game, one from Synapse and a port by Sega itself. Zaxxon was also made available on the MSX, the Spectrum ZX Sinclair, the TRS-80, PC, and the Sega SG-1000. Zaxxon also saw not only a board game by Milton Bradley, but was one of those legendary Coleco mini tabletop arcade games. And in 2006, Zaxxon was included on the Sega Genesis Collection for the PlayStation 2 as a bonus title, as well as on Sonic's Genesis Collection for the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. And finally, the game was made available on the Wii Virtual Console on April 12, 2010. Zaxxon, by the way, was one of the first 50 arcade games that Shay Mathis was able to obtain for the arcade. It shares space on the arcade floor with Gyrus on its left and Time Pilot on its right. Kind of appropriate, don't you think? And I think that about wraps up our podcast for this go-around. But before I end it, I want to thank John Munkus for agreeing to be my guest on this episode. We will be sure to have him back soon enough, so make sure to send me any questions you might have for him. The Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast has a Facebook page now. Hop on over and give us a like. It's a great spot to share your own arcade memories and enjoy the celebration of classic arcade and home video games. Our ending theme, which is entitled River Raid, was composed by the extremely talented Tony Longworth. You can listen to even more of his music on SoundCloud and on his official site, which you can reach at www.tonylongworth.com. Friends, if you have any feedback for the show, or perhaps a suggestion for a game to cover, you can reach me at vicsage@retroist.com. Diary of an Arcade Employee is of course available on iTunes, and I would really appreciate it if you could hop on over there and give us a positive review if you like the show. It really, really helps to get the podcast out to new listeners. For further information about the Arcadia Retrocade, please make sure to follow them over on their Facebook page. I'll be sure to provide a link on the Retroist post. Of course, I want to give a huge thanks to The Retroist, not for just hosting this podcast, but for allowing me to record in The Retroist Vault. And when you need your daily retro fix, you can do so at www.retroist.com. Have a token on me as we listen to a clip for the game I will discuss on the next show. This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye, and we hope to see you next time.